Hey, you're just in time because it's time for Ham Nation, and we have got a great guest for you tonight. One of the really nice guys in amateur radio, that is Rich Moseson, W2VU. He is the editor of CQ Magazine, and we're going to talk about what all's going on with CQ, and we're going to give you a little insight into Rich's past as a broadcaster and his connection to Walter Cronkite. Yeah, it's all coming up right now here on Ham Nation. Tune in. Ham Nation is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether employees are working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. This is Ham Nation, episode 476 for October 21st, 2020. The latest from CQ Magazine.
Good evening, everybody. It's Bob Heil, K9EID, and we welcome you here to Ham Nation. It's a show all about ham radio and fun things. And we have fun people to bring it to you, real special tonight, too. So let's check it all out. First of all, Gordon West is there holding down the West Coast. How you doing, Gord?
Doing well. We have rain, they say, coming in on Saturday or Sunday. So that'll help put out the fires and we can breathe again, Bob.
Okay. We had it was 60 today. It's going to be 80 tomorrow. And after 2 days of rain, fabulous. Okay. Don, how are you doing? You all right? You and Don?
Yeah, we're great. We're having a great time here in the piney woods of Mississippi like we always do. We've got Newsline and Dr. T tonight. And really excited to talk to our guest who is right beside me in the shot down here, our good friend Mr. Moseson.
Absolutely. And George Thomas is back getting his soldering iron warmed up. And she's watching all of you in the chat room, so be careful. But we do want you to make some comments and questions that we can get to at the end. I can't be here the whole show because I'm doing another thing here in the middle of all this, and I've got to go run to another meeting. But that's the way it goes. But let's say hi to Rich Moseson of CQ Magazine. How are you? And thanks for being here.
I'm great, thanks, and thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to join you all and see you all in person as close to in person as possible these days.
Well, we can't do it on the floor of the Hamventions, but that's all right. It's good to have you, and we'll look forward to hearing a little bit about what's going on with my favorite magazine. This was my favorite. Yeah, why? Well, we know why, because Valerie and Jerry were on. How cool. All right. Well, I got a couple little things here that I want to start with. During all of this craziness, I've been spending a lot of time doing this, working on my bench and building things and making things okay after I break them. But actually, I've been doing a lot of club meetings, 2 and 3 a week. It's just crazy, and I love it. So if you have a club, email me, and we'll do a Zoom or a Skype or whatever. I'd love to come and do it in person, but I pretty much isn't possible. But I've been doing a lot of club meetings, and because of that, I've been getting a lot of questions. We do Q&A. One of the questions I had, which really kind of threw me, a guy said, hey, I've only got one tree on the east side of my property, and I need to get a 40-meter and an 80-meter, but I've only got that one rope. I've got two trees on the west that's separated. How do I do that? I said, well, that's easy. What you do up at the left, you'll see that main support rope going out to the big tree, but you use a carabiner. You know, I've talked about them so often. I do not use pulleys ever. I use carabiners. And what happens there, the 75 meter goes on out to the tree that's north, and then the 40 meter comes into that carabiner and you can pull it the other way. You only need one support rope on the east side. And it really worked great for him. I was thrilled. So those are the things that you come up with and over the years. This comes from a friend of mine. And at first you think, oh, wait a minute, what are we doing here? It's a doublet that we called it back in the old days. And instead of using a single feed line to your dipole, you use a coax, as you see there. Now, it's important that you tie those shields together up there at the feed point. And as you can have it as long as you want. Tie the feed lines again down at the bottom, but then you put it in to a 4-to-1 or a 2-to-1 ballon. And I'm telling you, with that, you can put that into a tuner and work all kinds of different bands with one antenna. And that really works. So for those that can't have multiple antennas and resonant antennas, this is the best thing. And you also don't have all that RF showing up on the feed line, like a G5RV and stuff like that. Oh my gosh, RFI city, because of that feed line. Here, the feed line's very, it's just like a regular feed line that we would use with spacers, but it's with coax. Is that cool or not? Yeah. So you be sure and copy this down and try it. It really works. And why don't we see more of that? I don't know, because it's a great way to make an antenna work a lot of different bands. This is one I get a lot of call on, and my friend WD4IQN Gene, he does such great graphics. You have a 3-pin balanced commercial microphone. And you want to put it into your unbalanced input, because all of the transmitters, especially the older ones, they use unbalanced inputs. Well, there you go. The secret is what happens over there with pin 1 and 3. Pin 2 is the hot pin. That's the unbalanced side. What do you do with the third pin? You can't just leave it. So you take it back to pin 1 and ground it. Now we have a regular unbalanced. But one of the things that's very interesting, every transmitter today, ICOM, Kenwood, Yaesu, Elecraft, they all have balanced inputs, but none of them use it. None of them. I scream when I see these guys and they come out with their matching microphone. They paint it the same color. That's about it. But if you have a microphone that looks like that, of course, they're going to be professional microphones, which much better. Well, how can you hook that into your 8-pin? There's how you do it. And man, what a difference. And it also, if you really want to do it, then there's a secret way to use the balanced input. Every one of them has a balanced input, and all you have to do is know what pins to adapt, and away you go. All of the cables we make are balanced, so when you plug it in to the Kenwood, the Yaesu, the Elecraft, all that, they're all balanced. And boy, does it help the RFI situation. Wow. Here's another RFI fixer. I fix more people's RFI. Surprising to almost everybody, the shield in your unbalanced microphone, it's not grounded. They do not ground the shield to the chassis, and many times this will help. You just run a wire from pin 7 down to the connector, and you then when you screw it on there real tight. You have balanced you've unbalanced it and grounded that shield. It works really good. But there again, we're dealing with things that it just doesn't happen. But anytime you need any help from me, there it is. Just send me an email. Look there. You'll find all my emails, or just my call at the ARRL, and that works. But we're really, really out there helping all the clubs. So send me some emails. We'll come and do that. I even do a little organ concert at the end if they want. So there you go. Gordo, you're doing a lot of club meetings also, aren't you?
Yep, sure am. About one, sometimes two a week. Many are Zoom, some are Skype, and it's always a lot of fun, Bob.
Absolutely. Well, let's see what you got for tonight. I know you got some shots.
All right. Yep, short shots. But before, we'll go way back in radio history, even before the days of 27 megahertz class D CB, and it was short contacts, not with this radio here. That's an old international crystal. But this was, and the information says, a contact on 400 megahertz. And that was with the old class ACB with a Vocaline transceiver. And you'd move the plates in and out, Bob, to get the precise tuning. Well, when class D came to be, the class ACB pretty well dried up at 462 megahertz. And people really didn't have much plans for that. The FCC just sort of let it ride because class DCB was the band to get on because of all the DX that truckers and everybody was on, and the whole thing went out of control. But it's still around today. So what happened to class A? Well, about 24 years ago, Bob Miller, K2RM of Radio Shack, whom I was working with on the technician as well as the Morse code tapes back then, he called me and he says, Gordo, I got a new proposition. He says, will you get behind a petition I have to start a short-range 14-channel radio service, and we'll call it Family Radio Service? And I said, well, sure, Bob, I'd be happy to work with you. We had some opposition originally from one of the major manufacturers before they went, you know, this could really be quite a deal. So we're going to take a look at what occurred this past weekend here in Southern California. We had the West Coast Great Shakeout earthquake drill, and that involved a lot of CERT members. So let's take a look and see what's happening on the Class A back in the old days, now Part 95, Family Radio Service. These are Community Emergency Response Team operators. Brenda, our leader, is giving them a briefing before a drill we were doing. And to stay in touch, we use FRS radios. And the FRS radios are those that would be able to give us short-range communications. And they originally started out at a half a watt ERP. Many different sizes. Those are the ones from Motorola. This is the step-up size. And when we talk about FRS radios, and I've got some samples here when we're finished with the short shots, we'll talk about size matters. And these are the original Uniden that were a half a watt. And now the FRS radio service allows even more power than that, allows 2 watts ERP on some of the FRS channels, now shared a little bit with GMRS. Wow, all these terms. Well, for the family radio service to be appealing to CERT members for short-range communications when CERT members are on a drill or actually out canvassing maybe a block or two, they're a great way to stay in touch with each other. They run on little AA or AAA batteries, and some of them are relatively small. And the units have a range of, well, if you read the brochure, 2 to 5 miles. That is, if you were standing on a huge peak. Typically, the range between a couple of FRS units is more like 200 to 400 feet. Actually, they do go a little bit further, maybe a block or two. They've increased the power now from a half a watt to 2 watts effective radiated power on channels 1 to 7 and 14, I think it's 14 to 22, maybe 15 to 22. With those channels between 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, and 13 still relegated to the half watt. The difference in range is you can't tell the difference whether it's a half a watt or 2 watts with their little built-in antennas. You couldn't tell the difference. But a couple of years ago, the FCC was inundated with calls from the marine radio industry, and the marine radio folks were saying, for some reason, we got like families yakking back and forth on some of our marine channels. And this was because there were FRS radios that offered not only FRS and GMRS, but also marine band for both transmit and receive. One of the most populars was this unit from Standard Communications, which is now Yaesu. And here we are on Marine Channel 6. Now, wait a minute. No. Oh, it's FRS Channel 6. Well, that's one of the safety channels on Marine VHF, and the Coast Guard did not appreciate these radios. So as of 2 years ago, the import of these multi-service radios has been dropped. They will no longer be certified, and they'll eventually go the way of the dinosaur. But where FRS is extremely important, whether it's a half watt or 2 watts, in fact, manufacturers tell me on these small handhelds, they didn't change anything in the transmitter. They just gave us a little longer and a more efficient antenna because it's effective radiated power that they're looking for. When we have storms like that and rain is coming down, here's a CERT member using quite effectively an FRS radio to stay in touch with other CERT members on vehicles coming in and those vehicle operators getting out and shoveling their own sandbags. So great communications for CERT members in a real call-out that we had here a couple of years ago, as well as those that this past weekend on Saturday we could hear on the CERT channels. But the real connection is ham radio operators. All of you out there working with your local CERT team or your neighborhood watch that uses the FRS radios, and being able to take local areas of communications and then over a ham radio relay to, let's say, your net control that the 200 block of Evans Street CERT members reporting that street lights are out and all power is out. And then they get a report maybe two or three blocks away. So local hams will join up with a CERT team and be able to offer communications that will work over a larger area. They're not really talking any further to CERT members, but there's enough hams in a local area that come together to help support getting CERT messages among these low-power radios back to either a net control or the fire department. So here we see a CERT member on the left and a ham radio operator on the right. And this is a great thing because the ham can hold both a CERT radio as well as a 2-meter 440 HT and be able to hear what's going on and communicate back to the CERT member on FRS Channel 4 and say, you know, do you need more resources? And the CERT member 2 blocks away says no. So they then get on the ham radio and call in the net control. So there's a close relationship. And you'll see this when it's emergency preparedness day at your community, that the ham operators and the CERT operators will many times come together. Well, here's a neat thing about these little inexpensive, almost toy radios, and that is they are great for coordinating and they are great for getting kids involved in radio. The kids that just, big deal, they're not really tuned in to ham and they'll never be a ham, so don't even send them or try and train them to be a ham just yet. But occasionally you'll get CERT members going, man, I got to figure out a way that I can talk more than two blocks away. And this is perfect for you to get them involved with all that ham radio can do. And one thing that both hams and CERT members do is tea hunting. There you see from ComSpec out of Orange, California, the Tea Hunt receivers. And these Tea Hunt receivers are tuning into a 1 milliwatt transmitter that will send a signal about as far as a CERT radio over two or three blocks, and it's on the 222 interstitial band. So and the ID. So these little transmitters and the companion receivers from ComSpec are able to let the CERT operators get some good training to be able to locate where some of these little transmitters are. And you know, municipalities many times are working with the CERT members to help locate noise sources to their radio system, and this is great. So if you're thinking of getting kids involved in ham radio, try them out first. Try them on the little 1995, buy them as a pair. And if they go, wow, this is pretty cool, then maybe step them up to a more professional CERT radio that you see here. This one is from Motorola, and this one is from Uniden. These have the slightly longer antenna that give us 2 watts ERP, yet they have a power system in it that when you go to channels 8 up to about 13 or 14, they'll drop back to a half a watt. My real favorite is this one that comes from Midland, and they still sell it. It's a combination radio with all sorts of AM and FM and things like that, but it's a wonderful and a miraculously sharp receiver that tunes in all of the FRS channels. So the FRS service used to be 14 channels. Now they're 22 channels. And then if you really get a great FRS group and they really want to sort of operate on their own and they'd love to have a repeater, then you can get them tuned into GMRS, which of course requires a license. And once they get the GMRS option, you say, but you know, without having to pay any yearly fee, you can become a ham radio operator. So these little tiny radios are a great way to get folks tuned in to all we're doing on ham radio. Everybody have a great week. And now let's check out Don, because he's got a great week coming up. Don?
Yeah, that's a great gateway into ham radio. You know, for me, it was the Class D 11-meter CB stuff back in the 70s. That was my gateway drug, and there's no reason why these little FRS radios can't be a gateway drug into amateur radio, because radio is radio, and we're all going to work together anywhere we should. So no reason why we don't need to look at those things, because those are amazing little tools, especially for the price. Speaking of working together, you know, we've got Rich Moseson from CQ Magazine on here tonight, and Bob's going to talk to him. Rich works a lot with Amateur Radio Newsline, with the Young Ham of the Year Award as one of the judges, and we certainly appreciate that. And we'll hear from Amateur Radio Newsline and Dr. Scove here in just a little bit, but I want to turn it back over to Bob, because we're going to talk to the editor of CQ Magazine, Rich Moseson, W2VU.
Very good, Don, and it's so nice to have Rich here. I really should have done this before. I've tried a couple of times, but hey, we're here and we're all having fun, and I'm glad you're able to be with us, Rich. I love the magazine. And in the last few years, there for a while, it had a little downturn, but man, the articles in there in the last year have been really good, just like the old times. I used to write for CQ back in the 60s, and I'm talking about almost every other month. I was a crazy fool of building and doing things. Those were the days that you built things, and CQ was really one of the only places you could go see those articles and do things. Well, you're doing it again, and I really appreciate that. I personally appreciate that. And one of the things that I really like is what Gordo does for you. So I'm going to get Gordo in here, and Gordo, let's you take your take your take on this whole thing, because I know you've been there a long, long time. So,
You and I go back to the days of Dick Cowan of CQ. Yeah. Remember Dick with a big cigar? So, fond memories. But, you know, Rich has done such a great job of leading us freelance writers out there and keeping us absolutely on point. So it's really a pleasure working with CQ, because Rich is always open for new ideas, and he is fearless, Bob.
One thing about it is that he does things for the common ham. You don't have to be an engineer to read CQ, and that's my point of it. So Rich, thanks very much for doing that. Why don't you come on and tell everybody what's happening at CQ right now, and some of the things that we need to be looking for. And I'm glad that you're here. I have to run. I've got another meeting downtown. I better go get there, but thank you very much. And Don and Gordo will make sure you're going to be okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, it's great to be here. And, you know, getting articles for the common ham is what CQ has been about for the past 75 years, since our launch in 1945. And it's been really great this past year reprising some of our older articles in our CQ Classics series as part of our 75th anniversary celebration. And that's been a constant. And but I remember talking to some person who had submitted an article, this is many years ago now, and asking him to clarify some terminology. And he said to me, well, anybody who's taken Engineering 101 will know what that is. I said, yeah, but this isn't an engineering magazine. It's a ham radio magazine. And I've never taken Engineering 101. And if I don't understand it, it's not getting in the magazine. So,
good.
I never heard back from him. I don't know what happened. you know, we've got our emergency communication special out right now, the October issue, which saw, if I can get in the right part of the camera here. No, there you go. Okay, thank you. Thank you. hopefully everybody's got their copy by now. November is finished and at the printer. And we're working on December, which is going to be our technology special. So we've always got three different issues going on at one time. You know, people say to me, I got a question about the current issue, and I got to think real hard about which one we're talking about. We also have our calendars are in. If anybody has pre-ordered a calendar, let me do. There we go. They're great. I love doing the calendars every year, picking out pictures of different people and activities. And this one in particular, I think, really shows the breadth of our hobby, the different people and the different activities. We've got, you know, people operating from mountaintops. We've got satellite operators, microwave operators, DXers, kit building, you name it. Over the course of the 15 pictures in the 15-month calendar, we cover a huge swath of ham radio, and it really is a great way to just show people what the hobby is all about, all the different things you can do. And of course, we try to do that every month in the magazine as well.
And Rich, you did a ton of shows. All of the regular shows, you were there and meeting with the folks one-on-one. And I take my blonde hat off for that, because working shows, as you did up until when they closed most of the shows down, what a job, but you were there.
Well, I really loved talking with our readers and potential readers, and it's really a great way to stay in touch with what they're looking for, which of course is important for us to know where to focus. Getting to and from those shows is not always the most pleasant thing, but once I'm there, I really enjoy being there and meeting people and talking to them. And I'm looking forward to when we can do it again. Also looking forward to when I can get a haircut, which I haven't since, I guess, February. So I think my hair is longer now than it was when I was in college. Also grayer.
Well, you look good. Now, Rich, how did you get your start in ham radio? What was your turn on? And I'll let Don ask you the next question, Rich.
All right. Well, like Don, I came in through CB, which I came into through Boy Scouts. My scoutmaster was very much into CB, and he got my dad interested. We're basically for everybody to keep in touch when we were going off on campouts. My dad frequently was one of the drivers for the troop to go camping. So he got a CB rig for the car, and we really got into it. And then I got into, I guess around the same time, I was also getting into broadcast band DXing. And discovered shortwave listening and then discovered ham radio through a friend at high school and got my license in high school. And the rest is history. But I've clawed my way through the ranks of licensing. I was, started out as a novice. That was at the time when it was a 2-year non-renewable license. So after about a year, I went to the FCC to take my general exam, and it was before volunteer examining. I flunked the code test by, I think, 2 letters or something like that.
Oh.
Yeah. And the examiner said, well, why don't you take the technician exam, the written exam, and so at least you'll have a permanent license. And I said, okay, well, that sounds like a reasonable idea. He says, then you can come back in a month and take the code test again. Well, I did that, passed the written test, and got my technician license, which at the time meant that I was completely off the HF bands. So I was unable to practice my code, which is what I really needed to do. And it took me like 4 years to get back for another exam to upgrade to general. And then went to advanced at some point after that and got my extra. Oh, geez, I don't remember at this point. It's been a while. I think 1986 or 87, something like that. And I've tried a little bit of everything. I'm very much of a dabbler when it comes to ham radio. I try a little bit of this, a little bit of that. My current interests are QRP and building, but they haven't always been. I was very heavily into packet radio back in the 80s. In fact, that's how I got started with CQ, was writing about packet. And I've had a variety of different interests over the years, which comes in very handy in this job because it lets you know a little bit about a lot of things and a lot about nothing, which is very useful.
Don, what do you think?
You know, Rich Moseson is a treasure in amateur radio. I met Rich back in 1995, the year that I first got licensed, through Bill Pasternak and Amateur Radio Newsline and the Young Ham of the Year Award. And Rich has become a dear friend and a colleague, and I really appreciate you, Rich. And also your son, Dan, who I met when he was 25 years, I think, younger than what he is now, and he's turned into a fine young man. So be sure to give him my best. But two of my favorite things, I think, regarding you, are when you told the story of your involvement with getting Walter Cronkite licensed at one of the Young Ham of the Year Award dinners, and also remembering back when Joe Eisenberg, KZNEB, got the job as the kit building editor in my car in Huntsville, Alabama. So we go back a long way, and I just want to let you know just how much I treasure your friendship, Rich.
Well, thank you, Don, and the feeling is mutual. I really enjoy getting to know you and your family, and you're all among my favorite people.
We appreciate that. I would love for you just to recount the story real quick for those who who haven't heard of your involvement with getting Walter Cronkite licensed, because it's fascinating.
Well, before I worked at CQ, I worked at CBS News, and my boss was a ham, and in fact, it was through ham radio that I got onto his radar at all. I had been previously working at the Associated Press in New York, and once a week I could drive my car into work because there was overnight parking. I was working the overnight shift, and you could park on Sunday nights on the street without getting ticketed or towed. And I had a rig in the car, and when I'd go home at Monday morning after my shift, I would get on the local two-meter repeaters, and I came across two guys talking one day as they were on their way into work, and it was clear that they worked at CBS, and I just started talking with them and got to know them a little bit. And then one day, my phone rings at like 11 o'clock in the morning after a midnight shift. So I was not really awake. And the person on the other end said, Rich, this is Joel, WA2FFI. Did I wake you up? And I said, well, yeah, actually, you did. He said, well, I'm not calling on ham radio business. I'm calling on CBS business, so I'm not sorry. We have this show called In the News for children, and looking for a new writer and assistant producer, and needs somebody who can write quickly and learn television. And are you interested? It was the strangest job interview I ever had. I got together with him to talk over. He spent a half hour talking about ham radio and a half hour telling me all the reasons I shouldn't take the job. And when he didn't talk me out of it, he hired me. So he and I were working together. And also at the time, Steve Mendelson, who's unfortunately a silent key now, was working at the CBS Radio Network as an engineer there. And Steve knew everybody. And he knew Walter Cronkite fairly well, because he was the engineer for his daily radio broadcast. He did one newscast a day, and on the radio network, and Steve was his engineer for it. And Joel knew Walter as well, because he was very, very good friends with Bill Leonard, W2SKE, who was president of CBS News at the time. And Steve had talked Walter into wanting to get his license. I knew nothing about this. And I'm sitting in my office one day, and Joel, my boss, knocks on my door. He says, can you come in my office for a minute? I need you to do something. So I come in, and Steve Mendelson's sitting there, and Walter Cronkite is sitting there. And he says, Walter's decided he wants to get his ham license. I need somebody to give him a code test. Can you do that? Now?
So, no pressure so, there.
No. So Walter and I went back to my office. I think Steve had made a code practice oscillator appear from someplace. And I found something that had 5 minutes of text to it that I sent it somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 words a minute. And he copied it very well. And then he went on to get his pass his written exam, and became KB2GSD, and that was a lot of fun.
That's neat. And he never got past novice, did he?
No, his main interest was having the radio available. He's a sailor, and the main interest was having the radio available on board his boat if necessary. And at that time, of course, novices did have limited voice privileges on HF as they do now. And so that was what he needed. And I guess he got on periodically. And it was obviously great for ham radio to have somebody of his caliber being part of one of us.
absolutely. Well, it's a fascinating story that deserves to be retold every now and then. We constantly have new viewers on there. So, Rich, thanks for sharing that with us. That's a neat bit of ham radio history, for sure. Bob, back over to you.
And I'm sure glad he passed his test, because I would not want to be the person who flunked Walter Cronkite on his code test.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah, that that would show up on your tombstone, I think. Rich Moseson flunked Walter Cronkite's code test. May he rest in pieces. That's funny. That's great. Well, Rich, anything else that we ought to know about CQ before we move on?
It's the best ham radio magazine there is, obviously. And
well, yeah.
I hope that all of your viewers check us out. We've got, I think we have a couple of sample issues available on the website. If you're not familiar with the magazine, we have it in both print and digital editions. The print edition is available in the U.S. The digital edition is worldwide. And content's the same in both of them. So whatever your preference is, that's we've got it for you. And
we
got 116 pages every month of new stuff. And it's all
it's a great resource.
Focused on practical, fun stuff for hams and for real people, real hams. You don't have to be an engineer to build the projects in CQ or to enjoy the articles.
Yeah, it's a great resource. And of course, Joe Eisenberg does an amazing job with the kits. And man, if you're into kits at all or want to get into kits, you need to subscribe to CQ and read Eisenberg's column. And get yourself a nice little Weller soldering iron and a really simple kit. And start working your way up into maybe putting an Elecraft together one of these days. Because you can do it. You can absolutely do it. So kudos again for having Eisenberg on the staff there. That's good stuff.
Well, he's been a great asset to us in many ways over the last 10 or 11 years. And I hope we'll have him with us for at least another 10 or 11.
Yeah, so. Me too. He's a great guy and a great friend. Well, again, thank you so much, Rich, for coming on. And we appreciate everything that you do for ham radio in general, CQ specifically, and, of course, with your help with the Young Ham of the Year.
I am so honored to be part of that. It is just a wonderful, wonderful thing. And, you know, we all hear from time to time people saying, oh, there's no young people getting into the hobby. And they're not interested. They're not doing anything. And I feel so honored to have the opportunity every year to just take a look at the incredible things that some of our young hams are accomplishing. And, you know, one of the most difficult decisions as a judge in this event is picking between people, because you usually have, out of your group of nominees, you've got two or three people who are just so impressive that any one of them would represent the award well and represent the hobby well. And you got to pick just one. And that's a very difficult choice sometimes. But I also love the opportunity to meet with them at Huntsville when we have ham fests to help present the award. It's, I'm the only member of the judging committee who is regularly at the presentation ceremony. So I'm there on behalf of the other judges as well. And it's in addition to being representing CQ, which is a co-sponsor of the award. And it's just one of my favorite things to do every year in ham radio. The other, of course, is the CQ Worldwide DX contest this weekend, single sideband.
That's right. That's right.
There you go. Nice plug.
Yeah, getting ready.
Nice plug. All right, Rich, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we hope you'll come back real soon and tell us about some of the other great things that are happening at CQ as the time goes on.
Thanks, Rich. All right,
great to be here. Good night, everybody.
All right, good night, Rich. Rich Moseson, W2VU, the editor of CQ Magazine, one of the Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year judges, and always look forward to sharing the stage with him and our winner at Huntsville every year. Rich's remarks are always so eloquent, and they come from the heart, and you can tell that he really takes the judging to heart and is quite honored to be there, as we all are who worked with Bill and get to continue to work in his memory on projects like Newsline and the Young Ham of the Year Award. And speaking of Amateur Radio Newsline, let's go ahead and give you the news of the week now, along with a solar report from Dr. Tamitha Scove. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2242, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, October 21st, 2020. They looked like little party balloons, but they weren't. It was a nationwide mid-altitude ham radio balloon launch, and it was festive, even if it wasn't a big party.
Fans of amateur radio balloons are reliving the moments of the October 9th launch of 11 mid-altitude balloons as they floated up and began their journey from various launch sites across the United States. As they headed east to begin their two-week trip around the globe, the event was live-streamed on Facebook by the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum. Each helium-filled Mylar balloon is equipped with APRS on both 144.39 MHz and 144.34 MHz and traveling at about 20,000 feet above the Earth. Students, teachers, and other balloon fans are tracking the balloons via amateur radio and looking online for updates on their locations by visiting APRSdirect.com. The balloons were launched by students and their teachers in Washington, D.C., Alaska, Virginia, Oklahoma, Utah, Minnesota, and Kansas. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jack Parker, W8ISH.
There have been many famous musicians who are hams, Chet Atkins and our own Joe Walsh, just to name a couple. Although he wasn't a ham, Newsline anchor Paul Brown, WD9GCO, has details on how ham radio was paying tribute to another guitar hero who recently passed away.
Rock legend Eddie Van Halen, who died earlier this month, was the pride of the Netherlands, where the guitarist was born 65 years ago. Now, as his distinctive sounds resonate for his fans listening to commercial stations around the world, one additional station joins them, and on the amateur radio frequencies, in paying tribute. Special event station PA 5150 EVH will be on the air from October 28th until January 31st of 2021, a few days past the musician's birthday on January 26th. The special event is being activated by Frank, PF1SCT, a civil engineer who is also a guitarist himself and, needless to say, a Van Halen fan. A limited number of QSL cards are available for contacts, and those making successful contacts should QSL to Frank's call sign by the Bureau only.
There are plans for hams to be part of a satellite mission that began as a project in Hawaii.
The Hawaii Space Flight Laboratory has plans to collaborate with amateur radio operators to communicate with its Neutron One satellite to send and receive messages after the satellite is released in November from the International Space Station. Neutron One is carrying an FM repeater with a downlink on 435.300 MHz and an uplink on 145.84 MHz. It is expected to be in space for about 1 year. The Neutron One was launched aboard an NG-14 rocket from Virginia on Friday, October 2nd, as part of a resupply mission to the ISS. It is a project involving students, volunteers, faculty, and staff at the University of Hawaii. Its mission is to measure neutrons in space and radiation coming from the sun. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Jack Parker, W8ISH, Paul Brown, WD9GCO, Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's a solar update from Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
The sun wakes up with a bunch of new bright regions and a spectacular solar flare. Those stories and more in the news this week. Space weather this week is definitely beginning to pick up. You know, we started with a spotless sun, but as we switch to our Earth-facing disk this week, take a look at that. Bam, 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 bam. There are four bright regions in Earth view. They all kind of came up all at the same time, including region 2775, and they've been firing off little mini flares. On top of that, we have region 2776, so this is the second sunspot that is in Earth view, and it's been firing some mini flares. And then, as set 2775 rotates off of the west limb in Earth view. Look at this. Whoosh! That was a beautiful C-class flare. You could see that big fire jet jumping out there. And in fact, it was partially occulted. So that means that the sun was actually blocking part of that region. So likely that was even a stronger flare than what was registered here at Earth. So the sun is finally beginning to give us some fireworks. And on top of that, we also have a coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone here over the next couple days. And it could bump us up to active conditions. And that's some good news for aurora photographers. Now, as we switch to our far-sighted sun, this is Stereo A, and it's looking at the sun pretty much from the side. My goodness, look at that. The bright regions just keep coming. We can see region 2775 as it's rotating off of Stereo's west limb. There's region 2776 also in the south, and it looks like it's got some activity going. And then there's two regions in the north. One of them has already fired off a mini solar storm, and it looks like it continues to fire off some stuff. And what is this big region on the east limb in Stereo's view? And look at that big towering filament that's hanging over it like a big bridge. If that thing rotates into Earth view and erupts, it could give us a gorgeous solar storm here at Earth. But no matter what, it's going to go soon, and it's going to be a spectacular show. So it looks like finally solar cycle 25 is here, and things are getting exciting. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating that fast solar wind from that coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth strike zone. But this may be the beginning of an extended period of some fast solar wind from both that coronal hole that's in the equatorial region and also the northern polar coronal hole, which gave us a decent storm about a month ago. So at high latitudes, NOAA is expecting active conditions to up to about minor storm conditions with up to about a 20% chance of a major storm. And these conditions will continue to ramp up till about the 25th or so. That's where we might actually start seeing G2 level storm conditions. Now, at mid-latitudes, we're only expecting unsettled conditions, but we easily have up to about a 10% chance of minor storm conditions. And again, that's near the end of this 5-day, and conditions might actually get a bit more intense after that, because right about the 25th is when we're expecting the intense part of this fast solar wind to hit us from both of these coronal holes, and that could bump us up to a G2 level, but we've got a little ways way to wait. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, everything is still in the green when it comes to big solar flares. We do have a few bright regions on the Earth-facing disk, but right now they're only firing C-class flares. We don't have any risk for big flares, so no radio blackouts, thankfully, and that should make you GPS users on Earth's day side very happy. However, these bright regions are continuing to boost the solar flux, especially region 2776. It is a little bit noisy, but the nice thing about that is that it's keeping that solar flux into the mid-70s for amateur radio operators and emergency responders. And with the new regions that are going to be rotating into Earth view over the next couple days, this solar flux should stay in the balmy mid-70s easily throughout the rest of this week. Now, also, because we are at solar minimum, well, we're beginning to climb out of it, aren't we? But we're not quite there yet. The cosmic ray flux is a bit higher than it normally would be. So you frequent flyers, and this does include air crew who fly over 800 hours annually and fly at high latitudes and high altitudes. You are in the marginal range for radiation dose, and this does include prenatal passengers. So please take this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week is definitely getting a bit exciting. We went from a completely spotless sun to suddenly having all these bright regions in Earth view. And on top of that, they're all high latitude bright regions. So that means they're all new cycle activity. Plus, two of them ended up being sunspots, and they're active with some flares, including one of the biggest flares we've seen, if not the biggest flare we've seen of this new cycle. It was an absolutely gorgeous flare, and it was probably even larger than it registered at Earth because it was kind of partially occulted by the sun's limb. So that's fantastic. And then if we flip to the sun's far side, my goodness, we've got even more bright regions on the, in Stereo's view, including one with a big filament bridge, and it looks like that could go and make it a beautiful solar storm. So my goodness, do we have a lot of eye candy suddenly. It looks like solar cycle 25 is really beginning to light up. Now, on top of that, we do have a coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth's strike zone, and this could begin a period of some extended solar storming with some fast solar wind that's going to be coming from both that coronal hole and also the northern polar coronal hole. Last time this happened, it bumped us up to G2 level storms. But that's not going to be until about the 25th. So you aurora photographers, you definitely have a little time yet. This should ramp up kind of slowly. So you have time to change your batteries and get things charged up and ready. And we'll see. Well, let's keep our fingers crossed that this will give you as nice a show as it did last month. Now, you amateur radio operators and emergency responders, well, you know that solar flux is definitely popping up into the mid-70s, and that should give you some decent, marginally decent radio propagation on Earth's day side. And let's hope this is the beginning of a nice upward climb, because it sure looks like these bright regions aren't going away anytime soon. And now, you GPS users, well, you know what? We still aren't worrying about any big solar flares at this point. So GPS, and it looks pretty good all over the globe, because we also don't have any solar storms that should be hitting as of yet. Now, next week, that may be a totally different story. So enjoy your GPS reception, because right now it should be top notch. I'm Tamitha Scove, the Space Weather Woman. Thank you for watching.
Thank you, Dr. T. Make sure you follow her on Twitter, at Tamitha Scove, and check out Space Weather Woman for the absolute up-to-the-second information, because I don't think the woman sleeps. She's on there literally all the time. There's the website, and follow her on Twitter. That's where you're going to find the absolute most up-to-the-second, up-to-the-minute information right there. We're going to have George coming up next with Smoke and Solder, but first, here's a word from ICOM.
Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705 and its optional multifunction backpack. Now shipping. The IC705 is your perfect QRP companion, as you have base station features and functionality at the tips of your fingers and a portable package covering HF 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at 1 kilo or just over 2 pounds. With RF direct sampling for most of the HF band and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 MHz. 5-watt battery operation with BP272 or 10 watts with a 13.8-volt DC supply. Modes include single sideband, CW, AM, FM, as well as full D-Star functions. A large 4.3-inch color touchscreen and live band scope with waterfall, micro USB connector, Bluetooth, and wireless LAN. Integrated GPS with antenna and GPS logger, micro SD card slot for data storage. It comes standard with the HM243 speaker microphone, and it supports QRP and QRPP operations. The perfect accessory for the IC705 is the LC192 optional backpack, with a special compartment for your IC705 and room for accessories for soda activations or just a day in the park. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information about this and all the great ICOM radios. And ICOM invite you to enter in the weekly drawing for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats by visiting ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. While you're there, you can learn how you might win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For October, that new radio is the ID4100A entry-level D-Star Mobile with big rig features. It's a VHF-UHF dual-band D-Star transceiver, one band at a time. It has an upgraded user interface for easier operation, the latest advanced D-Star technology, built-in GPS, micro SD card slot for voice and data storage, and there's an optional Bluetooth board available as well. And you can download Android and iOS apps to work with it. So visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode and register to win. Sign up, and good luck. And that ID4100A is a great radio. That's the one I use
Well, it's right over there. That's what I use for my D-Star radio in the shack here, and I've really been impressed with it. For an entry-level D-Star rig, excellent radio, a lot of features on it, and wow, talk about memory channels. I probably have 200-300 things programmed in it right now, and there's plenty of room for more stuff. Thanks, ICOM, for sponsoring Ham Nation. Well, I've just found a new book, and it immediately has become my favorite book, and I want to share it with you tonight and let you see why I'm so excited about it. You know, this is the time of year that ARRL starts announcing their new books, and boy, I received an advanced copy of this one right here. I didn't get a chance to really browse into it good till today. I got to tell you, man, like I said, it's my new favorite book. It's Microcontroller Projects for Amateur Radio, written by Jack Purdom, W-A-T-E-E, and Albert Peter, A-C-H-G-Y. Now, this is the first edition of this book. It's brand new, and boy, you know, I like the Arduinos, the Raspberry Pis, all the little microcontrollers, even, you know, going back to the basic stamp, which is still available. I enjoyed using those. Let's just take a look at what's in here. And we're not going to go through the whole thing. This is a fairly thick book, so there's a lot of stuff in here. But the contents got a section, of course, getting started, an overview of the C language, and a general introduction to C++ and object-oriented programming, displays, project power supplies, mini dummy load, Morse code tutor, programmable bench power supply, 100-watt antenna tuner with graphical SWR display, a CW messenger, DSP post-processing, DSP audio mixer processor, signal generator, double-double magnetic loop, a luggable portable HF antenna, controller for that loop, and finishing your project. Well, there's at least three things right off I know I want to build off this list. And I think I'm going to get started on some of them very soon, as soon as I finish my current microcontroller project. Some excellent authors on this book. Both of these guys have the skills to be teaching this stuff, and I'm really impressed with what they've done here. You know, I've programmed computers for a number of years now, and I more or less was self-taught, but I don't think it's really that difficult, especially these days. But, well, let's just see why. They're saying right here, you know, despite the explosive growth of microcontrollers and ham radio projects, we still hear a lot of hams complain that they don't try such projects because I don't know how to program. And their question, yeah, so what? When you started studying for your amateur radio license, you didn't know what a Colpitt oscillator was. And you did you know anything about the various classes of power amplifiers? Probably not, but you learned enough to get your license and got started. And that's the same way when you're doing these microcontroller projects. But let me twist your arm a little bit more. And here they give you the reasons why you should buy this book. There's a number of them. Now, we won't cover all of those. Also, what do I need to use this book? Well, they give you some of the details there. You really don't need a lot, and everything is very inexpensive. I'm going to show you something about this one day, these jumper leads, something I recently discovered. There are some really bad ones out there that I picked up at a ham fest, but I don't have them back here at the set tonight, so I can't show you those. But beware, all of these jumper leads are not created equally. Here are the microcontrollers they cover, the Arduino Nano, the Arduino Mega 2560 Pro Mini, the STM32 Blue Pill, the ESP32, and the Teensy 4.0. Now, on these Arduinos here, most of this code will work with the other Arduinos, like the popular Arduino Unos that you see me use a lot, because all of that stuff is compatible and easily translated from one to the other. You just need the capabilities of the particular microcontroller, like the number of GPIO pins or whatever you got there. But, you know, they give you a good rundown. And all of these, I have not read through the book yet, but I believe they're going to use the Arduino programming system and editor to program these with, although there are a number of ways that you can program them. It's very easy to use Arduino because there's so much stuff out there. Now, they go into an overview of the C language. Okay, that's basically the language that's used on these, although there are microcontrollers that use a basic language as well, like the basic stamp, and there's a basic compiler for the PIC microcontrollers, although they don't really cover PIC in here that I've seen so far. And you're thinking, yeah, well, you got to learn to program. Oh, man, do I really have to learn how to program? And they say, no, this book is written so you can simply download the program code that's already written and compile and upload to your microcontroller and start using it. Then you might want to learn how, well, I can go in and customize the interface a little bit. I can put my call sign in it and my name. And before you know it, you're diving in there and actually making modifications to that code. But the heavy lifting, someone else has already done that on all these projects here and so many projects for microcontrollers and, you know, basic computer programs in general there, that you can just go download the code. You may not even need to modify it, but if you'd like to, it's a great way to learn, because that's how I learned to program, is getting code from others and doing modifications to them myself. And by picking through it, I eventually learned what was going on there. So don't have to worry about learning programming to get started with these. Of course, they talked about the C language. They also give a general introduction to C++ and object-oriented programming. It would be good to know that, but I'm going to say you could probably skip that chapter in the beginning here. You could skip a lot of these chapters. As a matter of fact, they tell you in here, where should you get started? Well, it depends on your experience level. If you've already programmed before, and if you've already, you know, done some electronics projects and stuff, you can just dive right in and go straight to the projects you're interested in. But if not, they'll hold your hand through the getting started process here and make it real simple. A lot of these projects you might want to use a display with, and they show you some options on the different TFT LCD displays that you could use, and they talk about the different ways to interface with those. But, you know, that might not be exactly where you want to start out on this, but it's great that you got the reference and can turn to it. And let's look at, the first project here that caught my eye, projects power supply. You know, you're going to need a power supply for just about anything that you build. And I have used computer power supplies before, but I hadn't thought about making this mod to it. Now, they're showing you a typical old computer power supply right here, an ATX power supply. You got in this particular one, they found 3.3 volts fixed at 10 amps. You got a 16 amp 5 volt supply. That'll do a lot. You got a 15 amp 12 volt supply. You've got a 200 milliamp. It says millivolt there, but I think they mean milliamp minus 12 supply. So you got plus and minus 12 volts if you need it there. And this one was 225 watts total power. Well, you know, you can find these things easy enough, 500 watts or more, so they'd all have more current. And they give you the details. And you might want to do this even if, you know, even if you're not going to build microcontroller projects, this is a great power supply because they tell you about buck and boost power supply modules that you can add, very inexpensive. As a matter of fact, we have looked at some on smoke and solder before, and it's a great way to make a variable power supply, highly efficient. Some of them have displays on it, or you can add your own display easily enough. Got a little basic block diagram here showing what they're doing. They give you the outputs for all the different built-in voltages, and then they're just tapping the little buck boost converter there to the 12-volt supply, and that'll give you a variable range of voltages from a power supply, depending on which converter you use. And they've got a display on it, so you've got a variable voltage coming out as well. Here's the connector on one of those ATX power supplies, so you got all the connections you need to know about right there, and they give you the cost comparisons there. You should not pay a lot for one of these. You may can find one already in an old computer that you're throwing away, or somebody else may be. Then they get into the actual building of it here. Basically, they took the power supply and they mounted their buck boost converter to it. They mounted a display here on a panel, and they put the female banana jacks on it there, on-off switch. And that is a very attractive-looking power supply. I mean, that looks like store-bought there. And you might expect to pay almost, $100 for a power supply that had all of that already. And here, you know, you can probably build that thing for less than $25. So that's just the first project in here, and not really microcontroller itself, but certainly a worthwhile power supply for anybody who does any home brewing or experimenting. I'm going to highly suggest that you check out Microcontroller Projects for Amateur Radio from the ARRL. I'm glad I found this book. It's, I've got a lot of hours to go in that thing right there. Some great projects. Well, Amanda is standing by in the chat room, and I think she has probably been collecting some questions for us tonight. Hi, Amanda. It was good to catch you on the net last night.
Hi, everyone. Thank you. Fix this here. Okay. Yeah, I did have some questions this evening. I've been on Twitter this evening while the show's going on, so I've been following some very devastating news up north here in Colorado, and I was just going to share a few excerpts of some of the traffic that's been passed on the public safety bans. Just real quick, this is getting very, very serious very, very quickly here at the East Troublesome Fire. One of the things was that they're requesting to send a code red, which means that they have to shut a whole road down, which goes in. It's the only road in and out of a huge community, which is devastating. Police are going door to door right now. These people, it's slightly rural. It's right outside of Granby, Colorado. And to say the least, we get teary eyed looking at this because, again, it looks a lot like Paradise, California. So, my prayers are with everybody in Northern Colorado right now. We've had so many fires. Just to give you a few, Cameron Peak Fire, 206,000 acres, which is like 25% bigger than our largest fire we've ever had here in Colorado. We've had 1,600 evacuations from the Cowwood Fire and numerous homes lost. So sorry, it's just seeing this. And we never have these evacuations at night. That's the other really devastating thing, is to see that all of a sudden in the evening time, when it's supposed to get down to 20 degrees in the mountains and it should get really humid, that all of these, all of the trees are crowning right now and all the flames are just taking over. So I'm sorry. I'm going to be in a good mood here, but I'm very worried about my northern folk. Okay. So I really wish Rich would have been here. We could have had some great conversations with Rich. I think that any of us could sit down with Rich at a bar or by a fireside or whatever and have a conversation with him, and it would last about 6-8 hours and he wouldn't even realize it. Am I right, Don? He's great conversation. Yes. So I think we got to have him back.
Spent some really cool evenings with Rich, especially in the evening at the Huntsville Hamfest live with Ted Randall on WTWW. A bunch of us would get together and just have a roundtable discussion on pretty much anything and solve all the problems of the world. And Rich, just an amazing guy. And he's one of those guys that's been there and done that. And you can learn a lot from guys like that.
Absolutely. And Gordo, I just have to say this. When you talked about FRS and you brought up CERT, and I'm really glad that you brought up CERT. I think a lot of hams, you know, the Aries is not your only route, everybody. You can always get involved in your CERT communities and serve another way. And you can bring your amateur radio knowledge to those folks. But, you know, you have to embrace a few other radio services like GMRS, FRS. But, Gordo, I was just amazed that you're one of the ones to help establish FRS. You were already a hero of mine. You're a bigger one now. And almost every community has CERT. Isn't that correct, Gordo? Anyone can get involved.
That is correct, including kids that may take a real interest in getting more involved with ham radio. So Bob Miller and I talked, and I said, Bob, you'll have my full support. And Radio Shack was out there and received a lot of very positive comments. Yes, a short-range radio service. And now that they can go to 2 watts ERP, the range is maybe another block or so, but it's still adequate for CERT operations.
Absolutely. And all communities are looking for CERT volunteers, not only that they're sanctioned by FEMA and by all of your offices of emergency management. And even in my OEM, we don't have an active CERT group here. Can you believe that, Gordo? That's disappointing. But we have all of these binders, and they're all on a rack, ready to be handed out to any team that wants to come together to become a CERT team for our community. So I'd love to think about being a leader for that, but I've got too much on my plate. But anyhow, I look forward to it. I know we are so over time this evening. We had some great topics on chat, and I'm going to bring these up later on. Nick wanted to talk about if your city asked you to take your antenna down, what would be your first approach? Boy, Nick, I can't even address that because I don't live in the city, but a lot of us do. So we've got some great topic questions for our upcoming shows. And Gordo, we can't wait for the sound off. What are we on? Volume 3. We'll be on volume 3 of the sound off, and we're all excited. So you let us know what week that's going to be, and I bet you we're going to have a big old chat room to finish this off to find out who our tallied winner is.
Roger, probably be that first week in November.
Very good. Well, let's go over some nuts tonight and ones that aren't happening. W7UDI can't make it this evening, and he said next week is the week. We're transitioning to 75 meters, so put up your other antenna or get it fixed or get ready to switch over. Get your dipoles up in the air, and we're moving over to 75 meters. I think that's going to be fun. I can't wait to stretch out my legs on 75. It's been a while since I've been on there personally. Check out Kevin, KC7FPF. He should be around 7192. We've got our VHF nuts, digital nuts, D-Star 14 Charlie, and DMR on 31012. So make sure you go out there, support our net controls, and tell them what an awesome job they do. And thanks so much for taking the time every week to get us viewers all on there. Okay, that's all I have. Bob, thanks. Bob looked fantastic, by the way, tonight. Snazzy red jacket. Just have to put that out there. Who's wrapping it up?
I don't know. George, are we wrestling for it?
Don, I will concede the match and let you take it, you know.
You always can see.
You do a good job.
All right.
Don's the best. He does an awesome job. Like, he's just, yeah. There's no comparison. Like, we all fail compared to Don when it comes to wrapping up the show.
No. All right. Enough of that. Well, listen, thanks to everybody for being here tonight. To Rich Moseson, what a great guy, W2VU. Make sure you subscribe to CQ Magazine. I've got the digital subscription, and it's great because it goes with me anywhere I want to go on my phone or my laptop or my iPad or whatever. So anyway, whether you get the print or the digital, it's a great resource. So
hey,
make sure you subscribe to CQ. Yeah.
The only thing we didn't ask Don was how much does a subscription cost and why is it worth it?
I bet if you go to cq-amateur-radio.com, all of your questions will be answered.
Voila. There you go, everybody. All right there.
I can't remember how much it is, but it's not a lot.
No,
you know,
not at all.
Go get a couple of coffees at Starbucks, you probably overpaid, you know, so.
That's true. That is true. The other thing I want to say is that sometimes those subscriptions, check your public libraries, because sometimes ham radio clubs donate those subscriptions to their libraries.
Yes.
And you can just check it out. I mean, constantly do that. I say support these people. But, you know, if you want to see why you should be interested, that's one way to check it out. And you can look at it for free or something. So, yeah, there's all kinds of ways to
do it. Victor just said in my ear, 12 issues, $30. So there you go. Easy to afford. And
is that the
print or the digital, Victor? Come on
Victor,
because we want to show your face anyway. So yeah.
Yeah.
That may be the digital. Victor is back with us tonight, by the way. Come up on the shot, Vic. Vic is a brand new dad as of what? Has it been a month now?
Two weeks.
Maybe a month old?
2 weeks.
How long?
Two weeks.
Very nice.
2 weeks nice. Going on 2 years, you know.
Yeah. And not the first, so that's...
So, okay, so what's his name? Come up on a five shot with us, if you can.
Come on, Victor.
The camera's not on, sorry.
Oh. Okay.
All right, well, that's all right. What's the baby's name?
His name is Jordy, and he's...
Jordy.
He's perfect.
And he is awesome. So cute. He's a squishy beast. And he looks just like Victor. And he's so cute. He's like, oh, and he wears little baby Yoda onesies. And I don't know what else he wears, but that's all that matters to me. And, he's adorable, Victor.
Thanks to Amanda. Thank you, Amanda.
Yeah. Congratulations. It's good to have you back. We had great fill-ins for you while you were gone, but you're part of the family here, and we're so happy for you. Congratulations. And what I find is shocking is that how many kids you have? You have four kids now? Is that what it is?
No, three.
Three. Okay. And they were all born on the 5th of some month, right?
Yes.
Wow.
How do you do that? What are the odds?
Well, he's good because they're all Libras. He's got all Libras, so it can't be that rough. So, you know, if they were all Aries, man, he'd be in trouble. But he's good.
Well, no, I'm a Libra, so great. Yeah, I support that hypothesis. Very good. All right. Well, we just wanted to jump in and say congratulations. Welcome back. And we're so happy for you and your family. So there you go.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
You're welcome. All right. So we'll go ahead and wrap this thing up because, yeah, as Amanda said, we are horribly late but making excellent time. So we'll see you guys next week. And thanks again to Rich and Bob and everybody else who works on the program here. We'll say 7-3. We love you. We appreciate you. And we'll see you next week. So good night, everybody.
Want more TWiT? Well, check out Smart Tech Today. It's at twit.tv/STT. It's the show where Matthew Casanelli and I cover everything there is to know about smart tech. It's automation. It's connected devices. It's smart home. It's all those goodies and so much more. We get the news. We get the latest devices. We do reviews. Everything. You got to check it out. twit.tv/STT for Smart Tech Today.